Okay, here we go. Okay, let's share screen onto. Oh, let's come on here. This one here. Okay, can you see that
Yeah.
okay? Okay, perfect. So, welcome to the live call tonight, Sunday, 31st of May. Thanks, Julia, for being here. We'll do the best with the group discussion part that we can between the two of us. We'll work through that one. So as ever, just want to say to everyone that I am here to help. You can reach out to me. It's perfectly okay to do that. That's the benefit you get as a founding member, that any, new members that when I open that up sometime fairly soon won't get is that you have that access to me. So please do use it. So this evening, just want to go over a couple of quick updates, just show you what I've been working on to try and help simplify the system down for you. And then we'll continue on the main topic, which is, should I change my technique? Okay, and then we'll answer any questions that Julia may have after that. So updates, first of all. So one of the things that came back from the feedback forms, and those of you who haven't done them, the link is still active. You can fill them in. I will read them. It does help to change things, as you'll see. I've already made a few changes as a result of them, so please do fill them in. And even if you fill one in, if you want to fill one in again and update it, then please feel free as well. Okay, so the first thing is that we've got a new navigation interface, which I will have to give you a login for. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you this. Now, this came about because one of the areas of feedback that we had, or that I had, was that some of the engagement was quite low in the content because it's quite hard to navigate, quite hard to know what to do next, where to find it, and everything else. So I thought I'd start to simplify that down a bit. So I'm just going to share a different tab here. Stop sharing and then share this one here. Okay, so this is what we'll have instead. So now what I've done is I've written a navigation app. Okay, so this is independent from the main RVD course platform, which I know is can be a little bit difficult to navigate. So I will generate a login for you. I'll do that this coming week. We'll get you email you all an individual login. And that actually opens up a little bit more for you as well. So when you sign in, what you end up with is you have a pathway that you can explore. Okay, and the pathway, so the first thing that will come up is on this front screen here. You won't have any kind of, it will just say choose your pathway. Okay, oh, just wait for Julia to connect. Okay, just wait for Julia to connect again. Coming in.
Yeah, I'm back in, sorry.
Okay, back in. Okay, cool. How much of that did you get, and how much didn't you?
I got about the new interface and you're going to send logins.
Okay, cool, excellent. So you can you see that on your screen?
Yeah.
Yeah, new interface. Okay, so this box here will basically say choose your pathway. Okay, which is the same as clicking that button. And the Runner by Design system will have three different pathways that you can choose from. Two are currently active. The one is being built at the moment. So one, you've got the simplified pathway. Okay, which is that 12-week challenge. So that was in response to, again, the feedback forms and the last sort of live call where it seemed that things were a bit overcomplicated and we just want to get people moving. Okay, that's what that was in response to. So you can choose the simplified pathway, and if you were to choose that, it always sends you to this understanding why running form breaks down course, which I'm currently writing. This would be like the onboarding course for membership. Some of this live call today is based around that. Okay, so it's about trying to simplify the understanding down of what we're talking about here. And then once you've kind of done that, then takes you on to the 12-week form challenge. Okay. The other option you can do is, which is more personalized, because obviously that simplified version is the least personalized journey. Although from week five, you can start to personalize it a little bit more with foot positions, lunge template positions, eye positions, etc. So the next one is this 8-week plan, and this is actually called the Neuro Engine. And this generates an 8-week plan where you check in every 2 weeks, you do an assessment every 2 weeks, and then it updates that plan for you based on your progress. Okay, that is about 60% written at the moment. It's just making sure that it works the way that I want it to. So at the moment, you can't actually choose that pathway to do because it's not complete, but it's just in here to show you. And then the third pathway, so what I imagine is most people will either start on one of these two areas, okay, just get me going, or this kind of more personalized route. And then I suppose the ultimate in individualization is the route you've always had from the very beginning, which is the same as if you were to choose sort of a library up here. It's the explore pathway. And what this then does is this gives you every course that's currently in the membership. Okay, so you've got the assessment module here, you've got breathing, you've got the coordination modules, foundation, etc., the movement stuff, the mapping stuff. And the idea being it's much easier to navigate it through here than it is to navigate it through the course platform itself, okay, through the membership platform. You can use either, it's entirely up to you. But this one here, what you can do is you can mark a course as complete, like I've done here. You can mark it complete so you know it's that one's complete, so you can track your progress a little bit easier perhaps than the course platform itself. As we add new content, this interface will be updated. I will also update the colors a little bit dark, really, for my liking. So that's kind of an easier access route. The other advantage of having it as a hub, it's going to call my RBD hub. The other advantage of having it as a hub is it then gives you direct access to some of the other tools that we use throughout the membership. Okay, so we have things like the coordination app that's used in the 4-week coordination challenge. Okay, you would click on that, it will take you straight to that app. The RBD circuits app, the one that gives you the movement circuit builder as part of the 12-week challenge, that's directly there, you can use that independently. We have the brain endurance training app, which I know one or two of you have used. Most of you won't have used this one. That will take you straight to there. And then the assessment module itself will be there as well. Now, the new neuro engine, when that comes online, has its own assessment modules, and it's a little bit cleaner, easier to use. But in the meantime, you've got that assessment module, which you probably should be using every 2 to 4 weeks to update, you know, see what your progress is. But we'll talk about it as we go through. Now, at the moment, none of these are linked into this particular navigation. That's my job for the next couple of weeks. And that's because what I wanted to do was do a single login. So you log into this hub, and then all of these apps, then you click on it and you're logged automatically into that app as well. It protects that asset for me as we open up the membership to other people, so that people can't just go off and take the app. I can stop people's logins and then they won't have access to it, etc. But if you're using these things through the membership already, you can carry on. These will be in a different location. Okay, so I'm not going to stop the existing apps. You can carry on doing it whilst I do the work on these. But there is a new app, and it's called Cerebrotrain. And Cerebrotrain is specific cerebellar reactive training app that I've written, you know, specifically for you. So you can use this anywhere. And this is all it's all written specifically to be used on a mobile phone or a tablet. Of course, you can use it on a PC as well, but it is designed for you to tap the screen. So we're going to have a look at that now. Okay, and it looks like this. So it's automatically logged me in. If you were to go directly to the URL up here, then you would have to log in with your login. So we have two training modes. We have a reactive training mode, and we have what's called a rhythm lock. Okay, and we'll look at each of those. So in reactive mode, you can do a 3-minute session, 8-minute session, and a 12-minute session. So we're going to look at the 3-minute session now, just so I can show you what it does. The longer session you do, the more endurance-based you're training your cerebellum. Cerebellum, remember, is about accuracy, it's about timing, it's about motor control, it's about rhythm, all the things that are super, super important for running. So I've designed this so you can go at any time of the day. You can just log in and you can start doing, you know, a 3-minute or an 8-minute session on training your cerebellum. Okay, so let's have a look what it does. So what you've got to do is you've got to tap the target before it times out. All fairly straightforward. But if you wanted to train your right cerebellum, then you'd use your right hand to do this. Then if you were to train your left cerebellum, you'd use your left hand to train this. Or you could alternate as well. Okay. The idea being that you've got to tap it before the line goes out. Now, the faster you go, it remembers your last 5 successful attempts, or last 5 attempts, and then it tailors the speed to those attempts. So if you're going really fast, it will speed up there. If you start to miss them, it will slow it down slightly. So the first minute of training in a 3-minute module is this type of training. Okay. Now it's not overly exciting, but if you've used the BET app, the endurance training app, you know that this is endurance focused. So this is really good. Now what the app does then after 1 minute of training within the 3 minute section, at least anyway, it changes. So now it's going to say only click on red targets. And that might be green, it might be yellow, but it's saying red. So I can only click on red targets. So now you're training a different part of the cerebellum, and this part of the cerebellum is inhibition as well. So you've got reaction and inhibition. And these are really important from a movement quality perspective. So we're going to do about a minute of this. So this is kind of go, no go. So green light, red light type training. Okay. And that is.
Do you have to do this on your computer or can you do it on the phone? No,
it's designed to be on the phone.
Okay.
It's designed for you to tap on a phone. I'm just doing the computer because I'm doing the presentation here, but no, it's designed to be on a phone or a tablet. So, and then once it changes, in the last minute of this, we actually go into what's called chaos mode. And now they just come on thick and fast, and you've got to do them as fast as possible as they come up. Now, this probably needs a little bit of refinement in some areas as an app, because when I get it wrong, I'm not entirely sure sometimes why I'm getting it wrong. But now you've got to react much quicker. And this is about overloading that cerebellum. So you're having to make these decisions very, very quickly about where you're going. And the great thing about the app now in the state of development it obviously works, but I can enhance it and keep on working on it. So we can do settings. So we can maybe do some of the reactions are quicker. We can change the reactions. We can change whether you, not just the colors, but the shapes that you click on as well. Okay. And then at the end, you get a summary of a score. You get your percentage go, no go accuracy. The chaos mode, I think at the moment, is interfering a little bit with the score on this, so it needs a bit of tidying up, but I wouldn't get overly worried about that. What your best streak was in terms of how many you got right in a row, and what your average reaction time is. Okay, so that's just really useful. It's just a kind of another version of the BET training, but it's very specific to cerebellar training. Now, if we look at Rhythm Lock is all about cadence work, specifically for running. So if we wanted to train, let's just say 176 cadence. So whatever your cadence is, whatever you think, oh yeah, I want to improve my cadence a little bit more, we do it this. And okay, we're using our hands to tap, but it's about cerebellar training for rhythm. And what we'll do is we'll do a 30-second session, just to keep it nice and short. But what you've got to do is you have a target in the middle, and as you've got to hit it, bang on the beat. So there is a beat in the background. And you see the line goes round. So when the line gets right round to the floor, that's when you tap on. Okay, and obviously you can do it visually, or you can close your eyes.
Are you just tapping the screen? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm tapping my mouse, but I'm tapping the screen. So I'm tapping that target.
Actually, in rhythm with that, you're tapping.
Yeah, in the rhythm. And then it tells me, gives you a rating, and then your kind of millisecond average error rate, and your best error rate is -2. It tells you whether you hit before or whether you hit after. Okay, and that's a really good one. That's a good one to do an extended session on, because if you are struggling with rhythm in your running, this is really good training for that. Okay.
So how far above your existing cadence should you try doing, did you say?
Well, that's a really interesting one.
So I'm running about 170. So what should I be trying to do?
Oh, I would probably go to 176, 175, 176. Train about that level. And I would probably try and start at the 30 seconds and just see how you get on. You could do multiple of that with the rest in between. But you want to work up to doing the longer sessions, because because what you'll probably find is you'll start to fall away. You know, from that, you start to lose the focus on it. And that's the bit you really need to train. Bit like the brain endurance training stuff that you've done, it's when you start to lose focus, that's when you really need the training to kick in. Okay, So you'll have access to that. I'll sort those logins out either tomorrow or Tuesday, so you'll be able to go straight in and start using that straight away. Okay, so that's the hub, that's the navigation app, if you like, and hopefully that'll make it a little bit easier for you to just dip in and take a course, mark it as complete, come back out, and it's just a little bit easier for you to kind of know what you've done, where you are. And any suggestions about how I can make this easier to use, whatever, then please just let me know, because it's all built for you guys, so I want to make it as usable as possible. Okay, so let's switch over back to the presentation. Okay, so that's that. So hopefully that's useful in terms of helping you to use the system a little bit more, a little bit but easier. So that's the Cerebellum training app and the Neuro Engine 8-week plan, which I am determined to finish, but I got a bit diverted doing that navigation app because I thought that was probably more important to start off with, and then I can come back and do the 8-week plan. Okay, so do you have any questions about that, Julia, at all, before we move on?
No, that looks good.
Cool.
You'll send the link to the
yes,
the new link.
Yes. Yeah, I'll set up the logins and send the link out this week. That's my job for doing the first couple of days this week. So main topic, picking up from the last live call, should I change my running technique? And the question I wanted to start this off with, which is from Julia, which was actually from the last live call, which I didn't cover at that point, was my foot, knee, hip, etc. starts to hurt partway through a run. How do I assess whether I need to stop and head home? Or are there any techniques that I can apply to see if I can get the pain to subside and carry on with my run? Can I do anything without actually stopping or slowing down too much, for example, in a race? Okay, so I'm not actually going to answer this right now. What we're going to do is we're going to circle back, and Julie and I are going to work through this question together at the end after we've gone through everything else. And it might make a little bit more sense then how you can start to think about the answers to this yourself. Okay. So picking up from last time, should I change my running technique? What we said at the end of the last live call was, well, it depends on where you are now and it depends on your future goals. So where are you now? If all your systems are all perfect and you're or a very high level, then yeah, maybe doing some running drills and doing that sort of stuff is going to be useful for you. If your running goals are, if you are happy where you are at the moment and you're not in pain, you're not getting niggles and all this kind of stuff, do you need to change your running form? Not necessarily, no. So it all depends around this. And what I want to do in today's or this evening's presentation discussion is to look at this in a slightly different way, because I want to reframe it all, because I understand that applied neurology, it goes against the tide of what we're all taught in terms of running or in terms of health and fitness generally, in terms of our approach to it. And I know it can be quite complex. I want to simplify it down and I want to try and get it to a point where you go, right, I understand where I need to train. I understand that I can experiment with it and I can understand that I can ignore most of what everyone tells me. OK, because you have confidence in knowing. That's the point I really want to get to, because runner by design, that's what it was always designed to do. But it's just and that's this great thing about, you know, all the questions I get about it and the confusion I get about it, it helps me to help, you know, simplify it down. So hopefully you can get the most out of it. This is kind of the whole idea. So here was the group first. It was going to be the first group exercise, but it's going to be a Julia exercise now. And we can do this together, Julia. OK, so I'm going to give you a scenario. And that scenario is that we have a standard recreational runner. Okay, and everybody that's in the membership qualifies to my definition of a standard recreational runner, as do I. Okay, and we're going to do some continuous running. Okay, so we're going to imagine we're going to do a continuous running. You're going to be well fueled and well hydrated, so we don't have to worry about fuel. You're not going to run out of fuel. You're not going to run out of hydration. You're going to be doing an easy run, so it's below threshold, so the cells can work optimally in terms of getting nutrients and oxygen into the cells and getting all the waste products out of the cells. So we don't have to worry about that. There is some adaptation because this runner has done some half marathons and they've done maybe done a marathon, or they've done at least some half marathon type distances. Okay, but they're still a standard recreational runner. And they also have had adequate recovery between their runs. Okay, so we don't have to worry about accumulated load. Okay, so that's the setup, that's the scenario. The questions are, given all of this and only looking at physiology, okay, so ignore the neurology, ignore psychology, only look at neurology. How long could this person run for in hours based on that physiology alone? When I say physiology, that's the kind of the working muscles. How long, how many hours, and it can be arranged, that's okay. How many hours could this person run for based on physiology alone? And the second question is, why can't they run for any longer? Okay, what is stopping them from running like forever, for example? Infinitum. So Julia, let's go through this. How long do you think this person could run for a recreation? How long could you run for if you just looked at your muscle function, your muscle and that kind of mechanical function, take out fueling, hydration, take out any neurology or anything like that? How long do you think you could run for?
So this person sounds like it could be me, and I mean it wouldn't be pretty, but I could run for quite a long time, probably at least 5 or 6 hours.
Okay, good, spot on.
It wouldn't be pretty.
No, but that's okay.
I'd put maybe even longer than that. If I just had to keep going, I probably could.
Yeah, just keep continuous running going.
Yeah, okay. For quite a long time, yeah.
So why couldn't you go for longer? Why couldn't you, for example, just run forever?
Because everything would start hurting.
I'd
get tired.
Possibly. Okay, so I'll give you tired, but it wouldn't be you feeling tired, because that's not a physiological experience. That's a neurological experience.
Okay.
So what actually happens? That's a bit of a trick question, really, because in theory, you would be able to run forever. If given the right fueling and working at optimal rate and all the rest of it. But there are some caveats to that. And that is because we are, you know, biological systems, parts of the muscle are protein based, and the protein does break down. And within that 5 or 6 hours that you can run, that can't repair within that time. It needs a longer recovery time. So that's one of the reasons. The other reason is just the way we store glucose and glycogen in one of the storage areas near the muscle head, somewhere like that, that again depletes and it can't be replaced within that 5 or 6 hours. They're the two other. If you took some of those things out, then you could basically run forever. There's no actual physiological limit in that sense. OK, so you're bang on. And that's I've asked a few people that, and you're the only person who's got this pretty much spot on. So this was going to be for the answers. We've got that. So well done. Okay. So we would call this your physiology layer. Okay. So this is your base layer. And I put 4 to 6 hours, but 5 to 6 hours, absolutely perfect. Bang on there. Okay. So given this scenario, that is your capacity. This is what you're able to run in. As you say, it might not look pretty, but you know. If you want to run longer than that, then certain amount you could train for that. But really, once you get even elite ultra runners, there's a lot of walking involved in it. And so particularly given the terrain, you've got built in recovery time in there. So that's why people can go on for a lot longer than that, because when you're then walking, you are then able to allow some of that recovery to happen much more so than when you're running. Okay, so this is our base layer. This is our kind of physiology layer. So, second question then, or second set of questions, taking into account everything else, not just physiology now, absolutely everything else, why can't they run? Why couldn't this person run for longer, or for even that 5 to 6 hours that you talk about? Okay, and why does the form break down? Why do they get pain? Why do they get tired? Why does the form break down in terms of being heavy on their feet or starting to stoop forwards? Okay. So what are some of the reasons why they couldn't run for longer or even run up to there? So if you went to run for that now, what are some of the reasons that might stop you getting there?
Fatigue.
Yeah, fatigue.
Causes the pain.
Okay. So fatigue.
The other.
Yeah, well, yes, they can be directly linked, or there is always a link somewhere there. You're right.
I'm talking about myself, but I get tired.
Yeah.
So my form falls apart, and so I start getting pain because I'm not running very well.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense, and you're absolutely right. And that's good enough. That's good enough for me. That's really, really good. And there is a whole model of fatigue we're actually going to cover in the next live call around that. But you're absolutely right. So you start to experience fatigue. You start to, or you might even get pain before you get tired as well. You might notice that your legs are heavy before you start to get tired, although those two things tend to come together as long as you've had adequate recovery between your runs. But you're absolutely right, those are major factors. Is why you can't run for longer is a lot of people is they get tired and then they start to get pain. So we need to look at layer two, and layer two is a predictive processing layer. In fact, every layer from here now is a predictive processing layer, but the first one is an inherited layer. So predictive processing, we know that the brain is predicting a fraction of a moment ahead of your real time, of your conscious awareness. And in fact, your brain's already made a decision before you consciously aware of it. And you experience that, the result of that decision. Okay. And fatigue is one of those things. Now, inherited means that we have some of these predictive models are called predictive priors. Okay. Because it's a prior experience, a prior model. Okay, so these priors, some of them are inherited, they're passed through our genes, and there's nothing we can do about that. Okay, so if we look at something called eye benders, there's some great ones in here. One of my favorite ones that I've used at the workshop is this one with squares. So let's see that. Okay, so we've got this checkerboard one first of all. Okay, and don't know how clearly you can see that. You've got an A square and a B square, and they look like they're different colors. Okay, you've got one that looks gray. A is gray and B is white or whitish with a shadow over it. Okay, the truth is both those squares are the same color. They're both that darker gray color. And the workshops I used to, I've got an interactive or a presentation model of this where I can drag that square up. So I can drag the square up into there and you'll see it's exactly the same color. And the reason why it looks like a whiter color to us is because there are certain predictive priors that are being processed in our brain. One is the direction of the light source coming in from some behind here coming in this way, and then we've got something in the way that's creating a shadow. So we know that it should be slightly darker, but then the checkerboard is saying that it should be white because that's the layout of the checkerboard. So there's these three or four different priors that are coming together and tricking our brain into thinking that that square is actually lighter than the other square, but it's not. It's exactly the same color. And we can see that in this top one as well. In this top one, they are both gray. But because of the way the light source is coming in, there's a shadow at the bottom, and we see that's fooling our brain into thinking one's white and one's gray, but they're not. They're both gray. Okay, so those are inherited predictive priors. There's nothing we can do about changing that, and we have that built into us for lots of different models for lots of different areas of our life. And so we have this here as well. So imagine that we have the first two humans. I say humans, it might be evolutionary before we became a human, but let's just pretend they were just humans. And evolutionary perspective, you have two people who go out for continuous run. Okay, so off they go for a run, and they get to about 5 hours, and one stops because at that point everything is starting to break down, and they go, I'm going to stop here. And the other runner carries on running. They get to about 5:05 and they drop down dead. Okay, they've absolutely maximized out. That's it. They've dropped down dead. Now, because they've died, their genes don't carry on, right? So they've basically gone to failure. Because they didn't have a model that taught them otherwise. But the one who stopped at 5 hours now had that their genes survive onto the next generation, along with a predictive model, a prior that says a human being can run maximally to 5 hours and survive. So that's a set of genes that then carries on up the line. Of course, I'm simplifying this down for a teaching model, but ultimately that's how it works. For every evolutionary cycle, we have predictive models that say, if you go beyond this, you're probably not going to survive. Okay, so we have this layer that's built in. And let's just say that restricts us to 5 hours. And so we've already lost an hour of our maximum capacity here. Okay. Then we have another layer above that, which is our personal models that we build throughout our lifetime. Either our own experience. Okay, so we go out for a run and we, you know, experience that on a hot day, or we experience that, you know, on a cool day, we might go a bit further, or whichever way it might be, we have our own personal experience. But we also have predictive priors that are built on what other people tell us, what we read, what we see, you know, what we're taught, you know, how we're brought up. Social influence is a massive one. Okay, particularly these days with how much information there is out there. These are helping to build our predictive models all the time. And for most of us, that's restrictive. Okay. So whereas we might only get 3 hours, okay, as we go up the levels, these are becoming dominant. These are becoming more and more dominant all the time. Okay. So now, individually, I mean, that might not be 3 hours, it might be 4 hours, it might be 5 hours. I mean, you might be super duper and you might get more than that. But let's just say it's 3 hours, because that's our personal experience. That's what people tell us. Interestingly, from a physiological running perspective, most recreational runners, if they do a marathon, they bomb out that sort of 5.5 hours, but that will include quite a lot of walking. So they're probably bombing out quite a lot earlier than that. Okay. And this is why I love a marathon. A marathon is it's probably the longest test in terms of distance that you can do at a decent intensity. Once you get beyond a marathon distance, and this kind of explains partly why that is, you then have to change your strategy quite dramatically. Okay. So we have this personal layer predictive prior, and this is very, very individual as well, based on your life's experiences and what you've learned and what you know, everything around that. And the layer on top of that is a systems level predictive processing layer. Okay. And this is your visual system, your vestibular system, your proprioceptive system, and the integration. Everything we've been talking about for quite a long time. And this will restrict you even more, anywhere from 0 to 90 minutes. I mean, it could be more than 90 minutes. I'm just making up the numbers a little bit. From 0 could be, well, I just have so much pain, I can't even get out and run. Or I have no motivation, I can't get out and run. Oh, I'm so tired, I can't get out and run. So it can be from 0 minutes up to wherever you currently are right now. And I know some people in the membership might only go to 35 or 40 minutes before they're in so much pain they just want to stop. But you might also go up to, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours before it breaks down. Okay, it's very individual, this level. But this is the level that's the limiter. Okay. Does all that make sense?
Yes.
Cool. Okay. So, which layer do you train the most? As an individual, just yourself. What level do you train? Where do you do most of your training?
In the 0 to 90.
No, do you actually, though? I mean, do you in reality? So do you spend a lot of time in the gym doing strength work and everything else?
Some time, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the physiology layer. I mean, you do quite a lot up here. I agree. But most people who will be watching this do most of the stuff down here. Okay, any strength work that you do, any mobility, flexibility work that you do, this is all the physiology layer. Okay.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, sorry, I thought you meant the time thing. Okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, so most people will do all their training down here. Okay.
Yeah.
But which layer needs the least help?
That one, yeah, the green.
Yeah, that physiology layer, yeah, because that's the capacity layer. We know you can go to, say, 5 hours without any problem, without anything breaking down. We know that. Okay. And tissue adaptation, by the way, as a quite complicated one, but generally driven by neurology. Obviously, if you're talking about a beginner runner who's never done anything, that's different. So which layer needs the most help? Would you say?
I'm assuming it's the top one.
Yeah, because that's the most restrictive one. That's the one that's going to restrict you possibly from even getting out the door in the first place. But that's not the one that most people train in. Most people train in the one that needs no help at all. So what I'm trying to do is help you to reframe why you need to train at a systems level. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
Okay. Why? Okay. In what way does it not make sense? What way doesn't it click?
I don't quite understand the top one.
Okay. So if you have a deficit in your visual system or your vestibular system or your proprioceptive system, your joint sense system, or the integration between that, your brain is not going to allow you to express strength because it's not safe. You're basically you're a danger to yourself. Okay. So if you are creating a lot of tension all the time, it's because your system is not fluid. And if you're creating tension, it's because your brain can't stabilize your system. You've lost control. A system that's in control has fluid movement. If you look at an elite runner, they're fluid movement. You don't see elite runners who are creating lots of tension. Okay. So
what you mean is like, so for example, my knee or my hip might start hurting.
Yeah.
And that's what's stopping me, not.
Yeah. That's not a physiology. You don't have anything wrong with your hip or your knee. You have something wrong up here. And because the way the brain works is giving you the warning sign of saying, your hip and your knee are sore because I can't control it properly. Please stop doing what you're doing or change what you're doing. Okay. That's not a layer down here. That's a layer up here. Okay. Because those systems are the ones that determine the output. So this layer here really is how you use that output. This layer here is all the ingredients that go in to do it. Okay. So I suppose a simple example would be, if you were to close your eyes and run as fast as you can, how safe would you feel?
Not safe at all.
No, exactly. So if you've got any deficit in the visual system, it's just a different version of that. If you had, I don't know, 3 bottles of wine and went out for a run, how safe would you feel?
Not safe.
So that is the same as a deficit in your vestibular system or in your cerebellar system, because that's cerebellar gets by alcohol. If someone were to give you a local anesthetic in your knees and lower legs and you couldn't feel them, how safe would it be for a run?
That's
your proprioceptive system. Any deficit in your proprioceptive system, the sensory information can't come back. Okay. So this is why this is the restrictive layer. Any deficit in those systems causes your overall system to lower what the output is, because it goes, you're not safe. Something's going to happen. Okay. And I will give you an example. So most runners train at the physiology level because that's where they're taught. That's all the information we have. Very few people teach you to do it at this level here. Okay. And that's because most coaches, therapists, physios, call them whatever you want, whatever professional person you want. Okay. And we can probably add surgeons in there as well. Is they train their runners at the physiology level because that's what they've been taught. Most of these professionals have not been taught about neurology. They've not been taught about these different levels. Okay. I mean, this is a teaching model I've come up with, but it is based on actually how it works. Okay. They've not been taught that. So they will go out and they'll teach all their people to get stronger, do more glute work, do more calf work, whatever it might be. Yes, we need capacity, but most of us need to do have that capacity. What we need to do is train how to use that capacity. Okay. And I will give you an example. So injury levels and pain would be reduced dramatically if we trained at the systems level. Okay. Because when we have a system deficit, what we're trying to do is, we're trying to override that all the time. We're forcing a system that doesn't want to be overridden. So it gives you all these warning signs. And as runners, we're terrible at paying attention to warning signs, or we overact. We go the other way. We're always attaching it to a physical issue. But if you've not fallen over, if you've not been run over by something, or you've not run into a tree, you know, if it's not an acute thing that happens in the moment, then the pain that you feel is unlikely, okay, it's not guaranteed, but it's unlikely to be a physical tissue issue. Okay, because tissue does, just as we saw at the physiology level, it can go on for 4 to 6, it just doesn't wear out. Yes, it can be overloaded, but that comes from being a layer up here. And that's the example I'm going to give you. Okay, so this is a base, this is a case study. It's a real person. And it's, they've been a client of mine on and off, a friend of mine. And quite a few years ago, they had some issues with their knees, in one knee in particular. They had some surgery in the knee, and it was a bit of a meniscus tidy up they had to do. So they did a keyhole, tidied up the meniscus. Took them a while to get back to running, and then they came back to running. And then they, a few years ago, they did some marathon training. The marathon training went really, really well. The marathon itself was a bit kind of mid, but they finished it, and it was kind of okay. And then they kind of stepped back off marathons for a while. They did 10Ks, 5Ks, and they were doing well. Their average 10K pace was about a 4:30 minute kilometer pace. It was about 7:20-ish minute mile pace, somewhere around about there. And they had no knee pain. They started marathon training again about a couple of years ago, and they did all their long runs with people who ran slower than them, and they were getting all that knee pain again. Now, this is someone who went to the gym at least 4 times a week, particularly when they started to get knee pain. They saw a very expensive physio who was doing all kinds of electric shock treatment and all this kind of stuff that to do on it. So they were doing lots and lots of strength work, doing lots of mobility work, lots of stretching. They were doing a ton of stuff. They were still getting knee pain every time they went out for a slow run. So I did an assessment with them, and I discovered that they had very poor motor control at slow speed. So if they were to do something like a shoulder circle, for example, it wouldn't be nice and smooth. They would be jittering, okay, as they were doing it. It would be a jerky movement like this, okay, when they were doing slow movement. They were doing fast movement, it was fine. Nice and smooth when they're doing a faster movement. In fact, their training speed was probably about that. Okay, but I got them to slow it down, and that movement became very jerky instead of being nice and smooth movement. Okay, and that was consistent across all the tests that we did with them. So their cerebellar control was very poor at slow speeds. Okay, and they were doing a lot of their running with people who were slower than them. So they were putting themselves in the worst possible case, because they had very poor motor control. They couldn't stabilize their joints at slow speed. They just couldn't do it. So all the pain was a warning from their system saying, you are doing something that is not safe. You cannot continue to do this, because if you do, you may end up being injured, have a real tissue issue. And lo and behold, they ignored it. They didn't train it, because obviously my recommendation was they train that slow speed coordination. They didn't do that. And it was a while later, it was like 6 to 8 months later, the knee pain was so severe it actually stopped them from running. And then, you know, they continued with a very expensive physio who said it was this, or said it was that, or said it was the next thing. They went for some scans. In the end, they ended up, nothing worked at all. And this was maybe 6 months of care. And because they didn't fully buy into the whole neuro thing, they didn't trust that training, so they didn't do it. They then went to see a surgeon, and the surgeon said, well, it could be this or it could be that. They did some MRIs on them, and the MRIs were inconclusive. Okay. They couldn't tell from the MRIs what the issue really is. It could be one thing, which is going to take a lot of recovery if they had to fix that, or it was going to be this other thing, which wasn't going to take quite as much recovery. But either way, the surgeon said, you're going to have surgery. So they did. They had an investigation. I don't know why that word is not coming to me now. In there, and I think the outcome was it was something like a meniscus tear or something. So it was the least bad, which is a good thing. Okay, the challenge they're going to have is when they go back to rehab to do the rehab training. Okay, they're going to have to run slow. They can't go straight in there and run fast. Which is, or you know, run at that 4:30 minute kilometer pace anymore, because the loading would be too much depending on what the surgery has done. So they're going to have to work out a way of being able to run slowly and progressively, which means they have to sort out that cerebellar issue. Otherwise, they could be overloading that tissue again in the same way. Okay, this is why it's so important to pay attention to pain, but also to work out where the lowest performing system is. Okay, This is why you have to work at a systems level, because this person was doing so much strength work, it was unbelievable. None of it was having any benefit at all. None of it. Because that wasn't the problem. They had enough strength, but they weren't able to access the strength and stability when they needed it most. Okay. Does that help to highlight this a little bit better?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, cool. So what I was going to ask then was, we were going to have a group discussion about a case study, but we don't need to. Or we can talk about yourself if you want, Julia, or if you don't want to, that we can just move on.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Sorry, you want to move on?
We can move on, yeah.
Yep. Okay, cool. Okay. So this, for this next bit, so in with my endeavor of trying to keep everything as simple as I can, I've come up with a transformation framework that will actually end up being part of the onboarding course. So I have to just set this up. So I'm going to switch tabs in just a minute. This will come up in a minute. Why is it taking so long now? Technology. Here we go. Right. There we go. Okay. Can you see that? Okay, Julia?
Yeah.
Okay. So transformation model. So we're going to start off with a triangle. And this transformation model is a transformation that Runner by Design is designed to do. Okay. So we're going to take you, membership is designed to take you from your current point of breakdown, okay, that systems level breakdown, to a point where you can enjoy your running again and get consistency. Okay, that's the transformation that we're looking at. Okay. Okay, and to keep this very, very simple, we're going to do that through three main pillars. So one, we do it through movement quality, which is what drove the designing of the 12-week challenge. Okay, and that came out of the live call with you and Mark, and I suddenly realized, okay, yeah, this is a little bit complex and it's very easy to overthink it. So let's try and simplify this down. Okay, so we have movement quality as our first pillar, because you have to move well. Okay, to start to extend that systems layer. Then we have muscle tone. And the reason this is so important is because when we're taught to use the physiology layer all the time, we get very good at creating tension. It becomes our de facto go-to way of thinking we're strong. Create tension and we think we're strong. Actually, what happens is, you restrict movement around joints, you reduce your movement fluidity, you slow yourself down, and actually you increase your injury risk because you reduce your ability to be adaptive in the moment. So being able to consciously and unconsciously control your muscle tone is really important. It's a very, very important skill to have, that skill of relaxation and tension when you need it, because you should always only have enough tension to be able to do the movement you want. You shouldn't have any more tension in your system, okay? And then the third pillar is coordination. And it's so important because for a runner or for anyone who does movement, but particularly for running, because of the way the gait cycle is, you know, we need good rhythm. We need error checking. We need good timing, rhythm and timing. Well, I'll put them as separate things because they are very slightly different in terms. You can have internal timing, external timing, all that kind of stuff. Motor control. Okay, these things are really, really important, and joint stability. Okay, really important function of cerebellar and some other brain areas as well. So we go from breakdown to consistency using these three pillars. We actually do also have breathing as well. I'm going to just take that out of the triangle slightly because although breathing is incredibly important, I tend to stack that in there rather than pull it out as a separate pillar. Okay. So the individual transformations that we want to make are to go from being frustrated, okay, which hits motivation, etc. Being frustrated with your breakdown to being confident. Okay, being a confident runner, having the confidence, the fact that if you start to get pains or niggles in a run, you know what to do about it. Okay, to, you know, answering some of those points of that, you know, initial question that we put up there. Okay, we also on the muscle tone side of things, we often worry about aging. How does aging affect us? How does aging affect my strength? Okay, so we start to create tension because we believe that being strong in that way, you know, gets us away from that kind of aging part, or compensates partly from aging. And we want to move away from worrying about aging and about being bristle and all these other things that people say about aging. You know, you have a sore back because of your age and you can't do it anymore. Oh, it's just because I'm getting old. And I've always disliked that as a phrase. Oh, it's because I'm getting old. It's no excuse. It really is no excuse. So you want to move away from worrying about aging to being age isn't or is no longer a barrier. And it's not to say you're going to perform the same at 70 or 80 as you were when you were 15, but it's not going to stop you from running for as long as you can. Runner by Design membership is really designed for people 40 plus who want to run for decades. That's the primary audience. That's and it's becoming more and more niched into that. The more we've done this type of stuff, because I think it's so important that people enjoy their running and can get out of it what they want to for as long as possible. And then on the coordination side of things, what we want to get away from is a lack of control or a state of chaos. Okay, because when your running form breaks down, that's what you're in. You're in this state of chaos, lack of control. Okay, and we want to transform that into relaxed control. Okay, having control but without having all that tension around it, and having the confidence that, you know, within a run or within a race that you can take back control. Okay, or if you can't and the result is not what you want, then you know you can go away and train some of your systems so the next time you can come back and do that. So does that model make sense?
Yes.
Cool. I believe how long it took me to actually come up with that model, but describe it really quickly, but yeah. Right, so let's go on to the next one. So the other challenge we quite often have, and this is fucking in kind of in life generally speaking, okay, not just in running, but I think And as society has moved on into our, where we are in terms of, you know, the internet, instant results and everything else, one of the things is we want instant progression, or at least we want linear progression. So we want a starting point and we want it to go like this. Okay. But that isn't how we work as human beings. So when we first go to a personal trainer, or we go to a running coach, or we go to a physio, we expect our problem to be solved in a linear fashion. Okay, so it's always progressing, always getting better. And we see that about our running as well, but it just doesn't work like that. And in fact, as human beings, particularly as we start to get better at stuff and start to do systems training, what happens is, yeah, we progress, but then we might go backwards a little bit, and then we progress again and we might go backwards a little bit, and then we might completely go off the plot and then come back and then do it all over again. It's all a bit messy. But you're always moving forwards, and you always tend to be moving forwards faster than the linear progression anyway. But because we're uncovering layers, we're rewriting new predictive models, because the new science tells us we can't update existing ones, or unlikely, what happens, we actually create a new model that's more dominant, that's more helpful. And so in certain contexts, we can revert to the unhelpful models. But our job really is to build new predictive models, new predictive priors, so the brain has the best information to move forward on. So we have to accept sometimes, yeah, we go backwards to then go forward. And that's just humans for you. That's just the human system. The biggest understanding with this is we have to have consistent assessments. So using the assessment module within Runner by Design, for example, when we're looking at cerebellum, looking at eye function, if you're not doing that every couple of weeks or at least every month, then how do you know where you are? How do you know if you're progressing from a systems perspective? Yes, you have your experience of pain, but pain's subjective. It's influenced by so many different things. If your coordination is no better than it was 8 months ago, something needs to change. So you have to be assessing on a regular basis, because that's your benchmark for saying, well, am I just wasting my time with this? We need to change stuff around, because this only works. Okay, it only works. But it only works if you get the right key on an individual basis. That's the whole point of the by design part of it. You know, it's got to work for the individual. And you know, there's no point just battering away at the same thing and expecting a different result, because that isn't going to happen. But it might just be a small tweak that's needed to be able to suddenly move you forwards. Okay, so it's really important. And that, and the neuro engine, the 8 week plan, that's why it encourages you to check in every 2 weeks and do an update and do an update assessment on it, so it can update the plan. And that's the kind of the whole point with that. Okay. So the big question then is where to start. Okay, and because I know it's quite a complex subject, and really this is on this call, as in the onboarding courses are quite important. On this call, this is a reminder, really. Okay, a reminder, and this is where it all started from in terms of the current topic. Okay, most people, when their form starts to break down, are going to look at improving their running technique. Okay. But as we know, that is not a very good place to start. And it's not a very good place to start because that's the end of the process. Okay. That is the output. Just like in our baker cake analogy, okay, it's much easier to change the outcome of the cake by focusing on the ingredients. The running technique is the visible part you see. And yes, you kind of experience it as well, but it is the end of the line. It's the sum of the ingredients and the process to get there. Okay. So in terms of a place to start, unless your systems level is very competent, that's not a great place to start. Okay. The next place that an awful lot of people start is mobility and flexibility. Now, this does have some merits. And in fact, the 12-week challenge, movement challenge, is based around mobility, but it's not really a mobility challenge. It's about adding in all these other things. It's about motor control. It's about it's actually systems level training, just kind of disguised as a bit of mobility circuits, but actually it's not that. It's much more deliberately focused than that, and that's why it progresses in the way that it does. Because the challenge when we look at mobility and flexibility, so I do mention in that challenge, just start moving, okay, just start going, just doing anything. And that's because a lot of people don't do anything. But very quickly you have to be a bit more specific, because mobility and flexibility are often misunderstood. And they're misunderstood because we still think, a lot of people, that stretching gives us bigger range of movement, when actually stretching doesn't really give us bigger range of movement. And that's been proven countless times. There's so much research about this. Okay, it's actually the neurology that gives us that range of movement. Stretching can help us feel really good. It can give us a very temporary increase in range of movement, but it doesn't last. Okay. And the other thing about mobility and flexibility, for it to work properly, it needs to be running specific. And I know there are running specific yoga classes, there are running specific mobility classes, and they're great. But if they involve lots of stretching and lots of just general mobility without it being targeted on what you actually need for running, then it's still not running specific. Okay. All these dynamic runner programs and everything else are great, but unless they're doing hitting all those systems of visual, vestibular, and proprioceptive, they're not really being specific enough. But it can be a great starting point. Okay, so we'll give it a tick, but we'll say with caveats. Okay, it's got to be running specific. And then the next most common starting point that most people will try and do to fix their pain and fix their performance is strength. Okay. But as we've just discovered, that's our physiology layer. And really, why train in that when it's the one that currently probably has the most capacity out of everything? And I know that can be really hard to get your head around, because you go, well, I need to stabilize my joints. I need to get stronger. Yeah, but it's not strength that stabilizes your joints. Okay, it's neurology that stabilizes your joints. It's neurology that allows you to absorb the impact of running. Okay, tissue integrity obviously is really, really important, but it isn't generally most people's weak point. There is a point where you have to build capacity or more capacity than you have. Absolutely. Okay. But if you want to train for running, to get running specific adaptations, run. Going to the gym and lifting heavy weights or any other types of weights can be complementary. And yes, you can get some indirect influence on those systems. Absolutely. But it's not running specific. Lifting weights or doing stability work statically in a gym is not the same as doing it when you're 5 miles into a run. You want to get stability 5 miles into a run, go for a run that's longer than 5 miles. Okay. I mean, it's kind of quite simple when you break it down. So strength is our capacity, as we saw. It's our physiology layer. Okay. What we really need to be asking, okay, is why is the strength that you have currently not accessible? Okay. Why is it not being expressed when you need it most? Okay. And the second question with that is, where is the blockage? There is actually a part of your brain that has an inhibition function. Okay. And we saw that with the cerebellum training app, that it trains inhibition, that go, no go. Okay. Red light, green light, all that kind of stuff. That's inhibition training, and we need that for lots of different areas of our lives. But what we don't want is inhibition in terms of exercise strength. But if you have a deficit, just like drinking 3 bottles of wine and trying to go out for a run, that's not going to feel safe, and that's experiential, really. That's your you don't have any motor control, or you have altered motor control, for example. Okay, so if you have a deficit in your vestibular system or in your cerebellar system, it's the same thing. That's where the blockage is. So you're not going to be able to perform at your best and express that strength, because you have a weakness in an area like that. Okay. So we can change this around slightly. So does that all make sense so far?
Yes.
Cool. So again, back to a kind of a simplified model of where to start. We'll come back to another triangle. I do like teaching frameworks. I've missed doing teaching frameworks. I love teaching frameworks. Okay, we have at the top, we have our starting point. That's where we want to get to. Okay. And then in this corner, we have goals. And in this corner, we have where you are now. Okay. So these two, goals and where you are now, give us your current situation. Okay. And where we want to go is to find some clarity. And that clarity is your starting point. Okay. So a very kind of simple model. You need to know what your goal is. So your goal might be, you know, get rid of my hip pain. Or your goal might be, I want to get lighter on my feet. Or I want to do, I don't know, 23 minutes for a 5K. Whatever your goal is. Okay. And we will talk about your very next goal shortly, but basically whatever your goals are gives you somewhere to go, and where you are now is kind of assessing what your current situation is. Because if you've not met those goals, there's something that's holding you back. So that gives you your current situation in terms of awareness, gives you clarity, and then you can work on a starting point. Okay. And to do this, we're going to use another little model here. Okay. And we're going to have a little ladder. And in this ladder, we're going to have several steps. Okay. So at the bottom of the ladder, to find your starting point, okay, you have your current situation. Okay. And that is goals, and that is where you are now. Okay. Then what you have to do is then you have to say, okay, to get better clarity for that, I need to identify the lowest performing system. Okay. So it could be visual, vestibular, proprioceptive. I'll kind of even pull cerebellum out there as a separate one, because I like to do that because it's so, so important for runners. Step one is identify. Okay. So identify that lowest performing system. And then that gives you your absolute starting point. It gives you your very next goal. So whereby you might have a goal of, I want to get rid of my knee pain. Okay, your very next goal is, I need to start working on this system. So we do that by, first of all, doing a clean on that system. And the point of doing the clean is we want to eliminate, or at least modulate, okay, noise in the system. Okay. So if that was your vestibular system that had challenges and there was locked, your eye movements weren't very good, you couldn't converge properly, diverge properly, all this affects your ability to run well. Okay. It could be your vestibular system. Okay. It's not firing properly in any of those particular areas. There's a lot of noise within the system, so we have to eliminate that noise. If it's a proprioceptive system, maybe some of your skin stretch receptors aren't working very well, so we eliminate the noise there. What that then does allows us to train that system, okay? So that's specific systems training. So once we've cleaned up the noise, which is normally some drills that are quite quick to do, which is just making that system better, but it might only have a short term impact. So we have to then train it so it's a longer term impact. And then we have to look at the integration. And that's integrating with the rest of the systems. Okay. So if it's your vestibular system that we were working on, we want to integrate it back in to the whole, into the vestibular and the proprioceptor and the cerebellar side of things, so that now you're working at a higher level overall. It brings everything up and we're reducing our threat bracket. So we're having more capacity, we're accessing more of our running capacity in there. And then the final phase is to strengthen the changes that we've made. Okay. And this can be, or well, we definitely want it to be running specific. Okay. But this could involve some gym work. This could involve some running technique work, but it'll always be running specific. So we always want to tie it back to a running context. So for example, if we have vestibular issues, if we have some swimming type head stuff, or if we find that, the vestibular system is the lowest performing system, then we want to build some of this into our runs as we go forward. So you're going out for a run and you're building some of the drills into the run as well. Okay, so we want to make it as running as specific as possible so that we strengthen the changes in the correct context. And that would, what will change depending on whether you're doing a 5K or a 10K or a, you know, half marathon or a marathon or whatever it is that you want to do. Okay, we want to make it as specific as we can. So that then becomes, well, actually is the whole basis of the neuroactive system. That is the neuroactive system. Okay, the neuroactive method. Okay, that's the method I've developed. And it's flexible enough because more often than not, what I will do is, I will stack these three things together. Okay, I will normally build a stack where we say these three things, we can, the drills that we do are going to approach all of those things together. Quite often, actually, I'll also do that layer in there as well, that phase in there as well. Okay, so we can compress it. You get faster results, takes a lot less time. And I find that people get better results. So when I'm asking you to do some of the stuff where you're standing on one leg and you're doing head turns like this, that's sticking these things together. Okay, that's the clean train integration altogether, quite often. Okay, so we can shortcut some of it. That's why it's a flexible enough system. We can either pull each element out or we can put it in. Okay, so when we're doing a starting point, we always start with identify, but then we can kind of be a little bit flexible in terms of the other stuff. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Is it helpful?
Yeah, it's very helpful, and it's kind of what my understanding was anyway.
Yeah.
I just find that identify bit.
Well, this identify bit, this is hard. Your assessment.
I know that's okay. The starting point.
Yeah. So this is your assessment that you do. So the assessment module within Runner by Design, so you're doing, you know, this kind of stuff and this kind of stuff. That's identify. That's helping you to, that's all helping us to identify what the lowest performing system is. And you may well have a feeling if you're heavy footed, if you are struggling with coordination and motor control, you already know that your cerebellum is the weak point there. Okay. That's the lowest performing system. So you have to do a ton of cerebellar training. That's what you have to do. So if you haven't, you know, for example, if you haven't done the cerebellar module to find out what it might take to do cerebellar training, then that I would definitely point you towards doing that, because that's what you can use on a run. And if we look at what the cerebellum needs, it needs timing, it does error checking, it does rhythm and coordination. It likes complex movements because they have to be coordinated. So doing the piano fingers type things, is actually a reasonably complex movement for some people, for a lot of people. Okay, but we can do that whilst we're doing, this kind of stuff. Now we have to coordinate more than one thing. It's a massive cerebellar upregulation. You could be doing elbow circles, okay, but you can make them elbow figure of eights, which again increases the complexity because you've got to think about what that figure of eight might be in that movement and where the pivot point is. Okay, that's immediately training your cerebellum. That's immediately training motor control. And it doesn't matter that it's in your arm, I'm training it, because the effect is the cerebellum overall in terms of motor control, which affects your legs as well. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does make sense. I just don't feel like I'm doing that much of that stuff.
No, well,
12-week program, there's a bit of that, but not that much.
No, because that's not specific to that, because that's supposed to be a general get started, here you go, just get moving type challenge, and that 12-week one. But you can add all that in there, and this is kind of where we want to get to in terms of your understanding of it. If you know that coordination is a thing you need to work on, then any movement that you're doing, you just make it more into a coordination exercise. Do it to a metronome beat, for example. That's an example of timing, rhythm. You know, set it up so you have someone shouts out a random number and you have to do the movement slightly differently depending on what number it is. You know, in fact, you can use the coordination app of the 4-week challenge that does all that random stuff to be able to do that. So if you're doing hip circles, for example, do a hip circle in one direction, and when an odd number is shouted out, you change it and do the other direction. So once you understand what a system needs, you can build it into anything you want. The cerebellum one's probably the easiest one to do because you just timing, coordination, randomness, inhibition, all of these things is what the cerebellum needs. You just add it into whatever training you're doing and you're getting direct cerebellar training. And that will have a carryover then into your running. Does that help?
Yeah.
And it is about spending a bit of time and learning it. And, you know, a comment that Mark made last time was that you don't have the knowledge that I have. Well, I never used to have the knowledge that I have. And I'm not suggesting you need to go as deep as I do. But to get the results, you have to get some kind of a knowledge on it. You have to understand it, because this is why the systems don't currently work for people. This is why we have the injury rate, because it's so much easier just to go to the gym and do strength work. You don't have to think about it in the same way. But this is problem solving. And so all it is just problem solving. So once you learn the rules or the foundation rules around it, then you just problem solve it. And that's really kind of as simple as that. So you need to know the rules of what the cerebellum needs, and then just build it into your training. There really isn't a kind of a right or wrong in that sense. It's not like, you know, people will tell you if you go to the gym, you have to do a squat like this. Most of it is a load of rubbish. It really is. Because actually, from a functional movement perspective, we move differently in different ways all the time. So as many predictive models as you can make is just a good thing for your brain. So you can't mess up doing movement by varying it. All you can do is improve and build new predictive models. And that can only help you with your running. So we need to kind of move away from this rigidity of, am I getting it right? Am I getting it wrong? It's just experimenting. It's problem solving and experimenting. And that's as simple as that. There should never be a situation where, and this is where the confident part comes in. Okay. And I will keep on trying to simplify things down and give options. And maybe what we'll do at some point going forward, we'll just focus on one area. So cerebellum, and we'll just have a call. It'd be great. Obviously, the more people get to the call, the better, because we can have a discussion about it and people can, you know, it's a bit easier. But does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it does. I just been struggling a bit confused. And I guess I just kind of blindly follow these courses without really thinking what it's doing. And I guess that comes, a part of it is time.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite easy to find 20 minutes a day to sit and follow something, and to spend more time actually thinking about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and understanding it. It's, you know, there's so much time I can and I'm prepared to spend on it.
Absolutely.
If you want to get proper benefit out of it, I need to probably understand it a bit better.
Yeah, and I guess that's the trade-off, isn't it? Because if you want to progress and get rid of the pain and get rid of the frustration and get rid of you know, the performance lag and all, whatever anyone's goal is, to actually do that, there has to be some, you know, you have to say, okay, well, I'm going to put a bit, I'm going to have to find some time to do it. Even if the time to understand it replaces the time of doing the exercises for a few times. Do you see what I mean? So if you can only find 20 minutes, rather than do 20 minutes of just following the routine, do 20 minutes of understanding the work, of understanding the background. Could that be more beneficial to you than just following a routine? Because if you understand it, then you can change the routine going forwards much more easily. Yeah?
Yeah.
And you don't have to be an expert. You just have to learn the basic rules of, or the basic ideas of it. Okay. The first one is you have to fully accept that systems level is where it's at, because it's sometimes that can be a bit hard to kind of let go of. Well, I'm just going to do loads of strength work. But you don't need to. Honestly, I promise you don't need to. It's about refocusing where you're doing the work. Okay. Okay, so that's the transformation framework, and we'll do a session where it's a bit more Q&A based around that, so we can kind of spend a bit more time on that. I say there is a fatigue framework, but we're going to do that next time. Okay. So coming back to your question then, so this might help a little bit as well. Okay, so coming back to your question was, my foot, knee, hip, etc. starts to hurt partway through a run. How do I assess whether I need to stop and head home? Okay, so let's just deal with that bit first of all. Okay. So if your foot, knee, hip, etc. starts to hurt partway through a run, what is that telling you?
It's telling me that something's not right.
Yeah, something's not right. What? You might not know specifically, but what is not right?
Well, my form's not right.
Well, you've got a systems breakdown somewhere. So it's not your form. Your form is the output. The form is the end of the line. Okay, your running form is the cake at the end of the bake. If your cake, if the cake is falling apart, which is equal to pain, I suppose you could say, it's because either there was something wrong with the ingredients or there was something wrong with the baking process. Yeah. And this, your pain and running form are just outputs of the system. They're the end. Okay. If your running form is breaking down, it's because something is wrong with the systems that are feeding into it. That's what this is telling you. Do you think you're in full control if you start to get pain partway through a run?
No.
Okay, so also it's telling you that you're losing control. So if you're partway through a run, how would you assess whether you need to stop and head home? Based on the fact that now you know that the pain is because there's something wrong with one of the inputs or more than one of the inputs into the system, or it's a loss of control. It's always a loss of control. It's a loss of control. How would you assess whether that's something you need to go home for or not? What sort of questions would you need to ask yourself? So maybe ask yourself, have I had this before? So if you go back to that case study, that person who has ended up having to have surgery because of the slow motor control deficit, they had loads of warnings. They had over a year's worth of warnings of pain that they just ignored and didn't do anything. They did all the strength work and that didn't work. So clearly it couldn't have been that was the problem. It must have been something else, but they never did the something else. So one of the ways that you can assess whether it's something you can carry on running through, well, I mean, pain's always a red flag. So is it something you can run through? How many times have you had this before? Okay. Is it something that happens all the time with regular consistency? It tells you actually up to that point, let's just say it happens 5 miles into a run. Then maybe you just run 4 miles whilst you're working on your systems. That's what identify is all about. Okay. What system is it that's breaking down at that particular point? Okay. So what I would do, if that was me, I'll probably come home and I'd do an assessment, or I'll probably do an assessment out there in my run of what system is it that's not right at that particular time. Okay. And then we go, okay, well, I need to train on that. So let's just say you were out on a run and you started to get a little bit of pain, and we know it's the lack of control. It's a lack of control because your system, your brain, your nervous system isn't happy with the intensity that you're at that moment in time that you've continued for, say, 5 miles. So what is one small change that you could make? What would you have to do? What do you have to do to help your system feel safe again?
Slow down.
Possibly slow down, yeah. Because what it is you've lost control. And it might be for the person who's got a slow motor control deficit, they have to speed up, actually. But for most people, yeah, it's slow down. Okay. Now, I know you've kind of then gone to say, well, without stopping or slowing down too much, but perhaps you need to take some of the intensity out of it to regain control. It's the regaining control part that's actually the important bit, whether that's speeding up or slowing down or do something else.
Weirdly, I think I realized recently I do need to speed up.
Okay.
Sometimes that bit of momentum, I sometimes do like a really short. Sometimes I find them, yeah, sometimes it's the opposite, it's speeding up, not slowing down.
So maybe an area you need to look at then is your slow motor control. And we know with you, the slow motor control is a challenge, isn't it? When you're doing some of those movements slowly, they're uncomfortable and it's a challenge with it, isn't it? It's just why you like doing big circles and you like having a little bit of momentum. That explains it. So then maybe the slow motor control that you need to do. So yeah, in your situation, yeah, maybe slowing down is not the right thing. It depends on what intensity you're running at. If you're in a race and you're running hard, that's going to be hard to do that.
Yeah, but most of my running is not that at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it might be, do a little bit of quicker running. Maybe that's how you get your control back. Within a run. So that is something you could do. And if the pain goes away, then you know, actually, do you know what? unless you've again been hit by something, run over by something, you know, it's unlikely to be a tissue issue unless it's been going on for a long time, which could then lead to that. But if it's something that's, you know, you can check, you can alter something in there and the pain goes away, you know, it's not likely to be that. Yeah, you can get out.
You can try both, can't you? Try slow, try fast.
Try slow, try fast. It could be, I mean, it can be very context driven as well. It might be just running in that area of the forest you don't like, or that area of the road, or, and there's bits of the road I run by, I hate bits of the road, and I feel my knees hurting just thinking about running on that bit of road. You know, so there are all these kind of variables in there as well. So in terms of the techniques to apply, well, we've just kind of had a big discussion about the cerebellum. If it's slow motor control that's your problem, is it something you can do to help the pain subside? Well, like I said, you might just be changing your pace. That would upregulate cerebellum, but it might be adding in some other stuff. In your case, it might be some faster movements to upregulate it as well. Okay. And race situation is very different anyway. I think most people in a race situation are probably an intensity they probably can't cope with, so that in that case they might have to slow down. And of course there is always the little bit of a red flag that if this has been going for a long time consistently, then it could always lead to something. But if you're in the knowledge that you are doing this as an experiment and you're problem solving, then it's less likely to lead to anything tissue issue related, because you're tissue issues happen because you tend to overload tissues in a way that it can't handle, due to compensations or something else. So if you're experimenting with it and you're getting the pain taken away, then most of the cases you're not overloading the tissue incorrectly. I would say incorrectly as far as your system is concerned, unhelpfully is perhaps a better word, or inappropriately, you know, for your system. So it's unlikely then to lead to a tissue issue. Is that helpful to get some of that fear of this put to one side?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I've a bit of a think about it. But yeah, I do understand what you're saying.
I think the two main things for you is to look at it from a experimental perspective and look at it from a problem-solving perspective. And just and hold on to those two things. Don't worry about right or wrong. Okay, because in neurology, really, and certainly now in what we're doing, there really isn't anything. Yes, there are parts of the brain that react to certain ways of doing stuff. You can do it. But if you find something that works for you, that's great. And then you can make a note of it, remember it, let me know, and go, and I can then work out the technical aspects behind it. That's fine. But it's that thing about being willing to experiment and having an open mind about it and being problem solving. They're really the key, you know, about it. And that will, by itself will help to get rid of a lot of the fear, you know, around things. Now, at the moment, I've bought a pair of shoes and they're really nice, quite spongy foam, they're great, but my knees hate them, absolutely hate them, because they're forcing me to run in a way that I don't normally run in. So I don't wear them very often. But I know there's nothing wrong with the tissue, but if I were to carry on running in them without doing anything else, that might end up being an overload somewhere. But I also know when I go and do a run the next day in a pair of shoes that I know are perfectly fine for me, I might still have sore knees, but that's just my system complaining because I'm running on highly sensitized issue. But I know I'm not loading them incorrectly then, and it never gets any worse from start to end, so I know that's absolutely fine. So I think, you know, there is this element of trying to remove that fear by experimentation and problem solving.
I think I'm just so paranoid about going wrong.
And I get
absolutely paranoid, because you know, I feel like I just kind of get back to running and then something else happens, and I'm absolutely paranoid about it for the slightest little thing.
But I think a lot of those things that happen are because you're at a systems level, there's lots of things that need to be improved, and improving those things at a systems level is going to help with all the running form, the tissue loading, all that stuff. It's all directly influenced by that systems level. That's what's holding you back. Okay. So just to kind of go over a core message, your running form breaks down when control is lost. So your running form isn't really something that you hold together. And this is more relating to trying to fix it on the run, because it's your running form is something your system produces automatically up to a certain point. Of course, you can influence it, but only really when your system's levels are working well. Okay. So when fatigue rises, and so we'll talk about fatigue specifically more in the next one, your control starts to drop out and your output changes. Okay. So your running form will change in response to that. And you, that's when you get things like the pain and the niggles and all this kind of thing. And then the fear really comes in then when you start to get tired because your decision making falls apart as well. Okay. And trying to fix the technique at that moment of overload or a moment of loss of control, is actually just adding more interference into the system. It's not an improvement. Okay. So giving yourself running cues often doesn't work. What you have to do is take back control, which could be in your case, speed up a bit. Other people might have slowed down a bit. It might have to be, you know, just changing something a little bit, how they think about just how they're running to try and go, okay, you can do some neural stuff in there, you know, some piano fingers whilst you're running. That might be enough to take some of the intensity out. But what you need to do before you try and improve any aspects of your running form, like that, you know, think about the high heels, your system's got to be able to cope with it first. Okay, so trying to do it in the moment at maintaining that intensity is not the right thing to do. Okay, but you can help it by doing some of these things about getting back control. Okay. And the second core message really is about pain, and pain being the indicator of a high threat from a systems breakdown. Okay. And when we understand that, everything else becomes a little bit, well, we take away some of that fear. Okay, so it's not directly linked to tissue damage, but it can be present with tissue damage. So we know that you can have pain without injury and injury without pain. Just because you know, fall over and smack your face and you get pain from it, it doesn't mean that pain is always linked to tissue damage. Okay. And we know this is beyond any kind of argument in that sense. The two things happen at the same time because the pain is a red flag about that tissue damage or for you to do something about it. Okay. Having said that, we always pay attention to pain, but we ask ourselves questions. Just what we've been talking about. Did I fall over? Did I bang something or otherwise directly injure something? And this is called acute pain. Okay. And this could be linked to a tissue issue. Okay. So you trip over a tree root and you fall over and you know, smack your face and break your nose. Tissue issue. Okay. That's acute pain related to that. Ask yourself, have I had this pain for 3 months or more? Which is at the moment is still the benchmark, although some people say 6 weeks. You know, does the pain recur? Okay. This is called chronic pain, and this is unlikely to be linked to a tissue issue, but it may lead to one if being ignored. Hence, I talked about it in that case study. Okay. So that's why we don't ignore pain. But we also don't approach it with fear. We approach it with an open mind. We approach it with experimentation. We approach it from a problem solving perspective. Also, ask yourself, what prior warnings have I had? Have I had niggles and unexplained pain that didn't go away? Unexplained fatigue, other autonomic symptoms, higher heart rate than normal, drop in power, drop in cadence. And this is your system gating it in a lot of these cases. So this is not the same as having a tissue issue. This is likely to be a neurological thing, a systems level deficit that may be overloading tissues incorrectly, you know, inappropriately, unhelpfully. Okay. But it's a systems level. Okay. And has your running form been falling apart, but you're carrying on running through it, which is a bit of a red flag. But that's obviously why you asked that question about what you can do about it. Okay. So should I change my running technique? Well, in my view, train your systems and your technique will improve naturally up to a certain point. And then if you need to, you can progress it. But I think for most people, training at a systems level will improve their technique and their enjoyment of running and their longevity within running enough for them to not really do much of technique change stuff beyond doing running drills and bits and pieces like that. You don't have to do some specific gait training a lot of the time. But if people want to and they need to, then they can do, okay? So any questions about that?
No, I think, the bit you said about assessments earlier on, I haven't done any assessment since we started this last year.
Yeah.
I'm a bit frustrated that I'm not seeing any improvement, but how would I know I was seeing an improvement if I'm not assessing myself?
Yeah. And I think that's probably true of everybody in the membership. And it's probably true of everybody, you know, even when you go to see a physio and everything else, that the assessment is always the level of pain, which obviously is the ultimate goal, but it's not really telling you anything about the things that are possibly leading to it. So, yeah, I think regular assessment is a very good starting point.
Just going back to that, where's that on the, where can I find this assessment?
So there's first assessments in the Rally by Design membership. Let's go back to, I'm going to go straight into it. There is, lost my thing there. No, where is it gone? Where have I lost my thing? No, lost my, what is that? Oh, it's because there's a separate tab, isn't it? That's why. Right, let me just get back into here. Let's go to, right, let's share this tab. Okay, so in your, in the, it'll be easier to find when you're in the, when I, you've got this, but let's, in the actual course itself, it's in this assessment and gait analysis module. So, when you, it's difficult to see where, when I'm kind of logged in, I can't see them all the way you can. But if I were to go here, you won't see it in the same way that
and
I do.
This isn't the original, so where you can log in at the moment.
Yes, yeah, which that won't change. So even though you might be accessing it through here, oh yeah, I'm probably not showing that tab. You're still going through to this. You're still going through to
the assessment and gait analysis one.
Yeah, it's in here. And that will then take you, that takes you to that course, which, if I can open it up here, you've got the app in here that, you know, you can then go to. That's the link there.
Right, okay, I understand. Fine. Okay. I go back and do this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's the one where you do the shoulder wraps and the hand wraps and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Okay, and I said that all that is being improved, but at the moment that's kind of where that is.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And obviously, any questions you have, you know, ongoing, just let me know. And again, with the assessments, same thing is that the feedback to me is also really important as well in terms of your progression. And it's fine. Don't worry about bothering me or anything like that, because the cleaner the feedback, then the less I have to do anyway, in that sense. Do you see what I mean? So you do an assessment and say, okay, this is still not very good. Okay, well, we can target that specifically. You can carry on doing the 12-week challenge and we just add some tweaks to it. You know, it's just about more, a little bit more direct training for those areas that are the lowest performing system.
Okay.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for attending. And
thank
I will
you very
get
much
the,
for time.
You're very welcome. And I'll get the recording and the audio a bit split out as well.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thanks, Julia.
Thanks, bye.
Take care.